Meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division will come to order. Quorum is present. Representative Lee, have you reviewed the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair.
I move approval of the minutes.
Representative Lee moves approval of the March 5th minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Minutes are approved. Members, oh, and Representative Hornstein is here. We were just about to maybe shuffle the agenda. He's here in time. I will move that House File 3702 be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance Division.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you so much for hearing this House file, and I am very excited about it because it brings together, I think, two sectors that sometimes aren't always on the same page, and that's our manufacturing sector and some of the folks that are interested in environmental issues. And so those interests have come together for this bill. It is simply to study the possibility of moving forward with new procurement policies for the state of Minnesota when it comes to materials like steel and concrete and those that are identified at the top of page 2 of the bill. The rationale for this, Mr. Chair, members, is that we really need to do everything we can to address the climate issue, and one way we can do that is to look at state procurement policies for materials that the manufacturing process includes the least carbon-intensive ways of making products. And this idea came from some legislation that was passed in California called the Buy Clean Initiative, and the version of that bill was introduced last year, but it's quite complex, and so this bill actually studies the idea before we actually move forward with implementing a policy. So we are asking for an appropriation for the study from the Department of Administration, and I'll just say in conclusion, Mr. Chair, that a successful Buy Clean policy would allow Minnesota to select clean local manufacturers that have been vetted legally and are World Trade Organization compliant. And a Buy Clean Minnesota Act could position the state to compete in cleaner, more responsible manufacturing. And a Buy Clean policy would ensure that the state's vast purchasing power considers and rewards companies that have invested in cleaner processes. So, again, I think with foreign competition in the steel industry and others, this will, I think, protect Minnesota jobs. I have one testifier, Mr. Chair, and then I'd be happy to take any questions.
Well, and I believe you have an author's amendment. I will move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Representative Hornstein?
Thank you. Yes, and that simply moves the study to the Department of Administration. Originally, we had the Department of Commerce, but there have been conversations among the agencies, and we feel the Department of Administration, which is involved directly in procurement, is the more appropriate agency to conduct the study.
Any discussion on the amendment? Any discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Amendment is adopted. Representative Hornstein, to your testifier. Mr. Hallis. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Hansen, committee. I'm David Hallis, a member of United Steelworkers, Local 7263. I've been there for 17 and a half years. I work at Gerdau Steel. The USW is a founding member of the Blue-Green Alliance. The Blue-Green Alliance unites unions and environmental organizations to solve today's environmental challenges in ways that create and maintain quality jobs and build stronger and a fairer economy. I'm here today to testify in favor of Representative Hornstein's bill, House File 3702, which would create a study in a Minnesota for a Buy Clean policy. First, thank you, Representative Hornstein, and the co-sponsors on the bill for bringing forward it. The Labor Environmental Partners of the Blue-Green Alliance strongly support the effort to buy clean and when it comes to our state's infrastructure. And infrastructure spending, from road building to clean wastewater systems to public building construction, typically includes the cost of large quantities of steel, glass, insulation, and other materials. Producing these materials can create large quantities of climate and air pollution. The BioClean policies, like the one that would be studied under this bill, promote spending taxpayer dollars on infrastructure supplies and materials that are made in a cleaner, more efficient manner. The study would help determine how to best apply this policy to fit Minnesota's needs and benefit Minnesota's industries and workforces. By including the supplier's emissions performance and procurement decisions, the state can influence business decisions among the many suppliers who want to provide goods and services to public agencies, and this type of policy rewards companies for doing things in a cleaner way. The Buy Clean approach will allow Minnesota to help clean businesses and industries maintain their position as strong global leaders on climate action. It creates additional motivation for suppliers to reduce their climate pollution. And Buy Clean is a smart policy that has already been implemented in California. It's currently being discussed in Washington State and would help our state continue to lead the way in addressing climate change and proving that or providing family-sustaining career check jobs are integral to the part of building a clean economy. I urge you to support House File 3702. Thank you.
I think we have a few questions. Representative Green, and then Representative Heinz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. It seems like a pretty big task, and one of the things that I didn't see in your bill, it's gonna look at the economic costs of the cost of the economics of this. Is it gonna look at the cost of the buildings themselves? What is this gonna add to the cost of, well, I guess you could go right down the line from building a building to doing a road.
Yeah. I think, the goal obviously is to incentivize domestic manufacturing. But the study is intended to ensure that BioClean would not hinder construction of these projects. And then, obviously, the results are the results. So we're just asking to figure those, to find out if that's the case or not.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, it looked like Representative Hornstein wanted to respond before I asked the next question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and a very good question, Representative Green. I appreciate it. You know, if you look at, I think it's important, to your point on line 2.14, we are going to look at a life cycle assessment. So, you know, we're going to be using inputs from a variety of different, sectors to come up with this, the entire manufacturing cycle will be considered.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that. And one of the reasons that I bring this up is because it is estimated right now that about 25% of all of our construction costs in Minnesota is attributed to the rules and regulations we're already following. And so what that means for us in greater Minnesota, on a small township road, for instance, if we're spending $100,000 to upgrade a road and put in culverts or build a bridge, $25,000 of that is already going to mitigate out land, even when we have to put that land back exactly the way it was when we're done. And there's a lot of nonsense that goes on already, so we're concerned about that. Are there any of these tests, any of this work, is it already being done within the agencies that are out there bidding these jobs now?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Green, my understanding is, in the bidding process, and I'm a little bit more familiar with it in the transportation sector, and, there are a lot of different criteria, lower bids, they have design build practices, but this is new and unique. The study is really going to look at these, environmental inputs. And so I think that's what's new about this. If you want, we have people from the Department of Administration here that might be able to, amplify that. But my understanding is this is something that we have not done before yet as a state.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't get to bring anybody down, but I would be interested in knowing if any work at all has been done to look at these agencies, or even on a local level, what's being already done before we dive in with both feet here. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Lewick.
Representative Tyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not really a question, just a kind of a general comment, because we've got forestry product certification programs that exist that were actually created a long time ago for different reasons, to deal with environmental situations and how we harvest in the forest and what customers demanded. And then another program that's been around for a long, long time is a beef quality assurance program, which is a program that was put together by the industry. One of the things that I would particularly caution my friend from the steelworkers world there, both of those, we had an anticipation that was going to add major direct value to the wood products. It didn't, but it became just a part of what we did in the forestry side. It was, and the same with beef quality assurance. So that's one just note of caution is at least what I've seen with two different programs. By the people that were producing the product, there was an anticipation it was going to somehow put dollars directly in their pocket, and I can tell you in both cases it didn't for ours, but in both cases these other two programs I mentioned are very mature, and they were particularly the forestry certification process was to meet the needs of making sure that we harvested properly, didn't damage watersheds and that type of thing, and then the customers started to demand that. So as you said, the report will be what it is, but yeah, we want to make sure we do take a look and look at those economics that Representative Green mentioned that you know, wide-eyed, so we don't build up an expectation that there's going to be new money show up in somebody's pocket, because I was one of those ones that had that expectation, and it didn't work.
Representative Hornstein.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you for that comment, and I also want to take this opportunity to thank Representative Eklund and Representative Lewick for being co-authors on this. And Representative Lewick, you know, we will examine that thoroughly. You know, we include wood products of any type on line 6 on page 2. So all the issues you just raised, you know, should be part of the study.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hornstein. I just have a lot of concerns, because as the lead on housing, we're just trying to figure out how do we do housing affordable. And things like this just really scare me, that we're going to put another layer on unaffordability. Is there, once the study is done and they find certain things, is there going to be do you expect there to be a requirement that these products have to be used, or different products have to be used, or can it be just up to the builder or whomever to decide to use these products?
Representative Hornstein.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Tice, again, keep in mind this is a report. There's not any regulatory implications to this. There will be recommendations and a summary, recommendations to us as policymakers and you know, others, local governments, et cetera, will be able to access the information. And then it'll be up to us as a legislature to, you know, decide what to do with it. I think the beauty of this is, you know, it's not always that we have, you know, the Sierra Club, who wrote a letter of support for this bill, and people in the manufacturing sector and the steel workers that are, you know, on the same page and on the same team. And I think this has the ability to really bring people together. And, you know, we do have to consider not only life cycle costs, but what are the costs to the environment? What are the costs to the climate? Those are not always readily apparent. And so, you know, we have a bidding system already in the state that does, you know, give preference to low bids, at least, again, in the transportation sector where I am most familiar. But there's other criteria, too. And so this will really outline that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein. I'm very cautious, because I've seen this happen before in the building industry, and when you look at single-family home builders, we see how well products, how they handle the stress of environment and such as well, but it would be a very big hardship if we took some of the recommendations and just said it has to be done. And that's just my caution. We have a hard time with affordable housing now. We can't figure out what that is. And I guess my caution is we can't make standards and mandates that just really get us out of affordability business. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, has any other states done this type of study? If they have, what results did they find? Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Backer, for that question. Well, California actually has implemented a bill on this, so that it is the law there. And, you know, I think it's relatively new, so I'm not aware of any data that they might have. The state of Washington is in the middle and in the process of doing a study similar to the one we're proposing here. But we would be the first Midwestern state, and obviously, there's probably some different considerations in our part of the country than on the West Coast. But, you know, that's one of the most important things about this is that we'll learn, you know, how this could work or may not work here in the state of Minnesota. But California and Washington are the two, but there are several other states that are considering this as well. But in terms of laws that have been passed, through the legislature, Washington are the two examples.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author, I'm just wondering if you've given any thought to giving preference to Minnesota companies that are currently doing recycling, giving them preference in the bidding process, and let's say freezing out maybe some foreign recycled steel coming in from Canada or elsewhere, because I appreciate the work that Mr. Hallis and his fellow employees have done, providing a good steel at market rate prices for Minnesota. So please give that some consideration to keep it Minnesota.
Mr. Hallis?
Yep. Thank you. I don't believe nothing is set yet. I mean, obviously, this is just a study for now. The final bill is what the legislature is ultimately going to support. Obviously, I think a Minnesota product would be a cleaner product. The market price is going to be what the market price is. But a Minnesota product that's equally competitive would be the same price, but showing this is a cleaner product, a better product for the environment, and potentially could add zero cost to the increase of any project. Nothing's guaranteed yet, but that's the goal.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Representative Hornstein, any closing comments?
No, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing the bill. These are all good questions that I think are important to consider as we move forward. And as I said, I mean, to Representative Sundin's point, I mean, I think one of the driving forces of this was that dumping of steel from, China and other places that is not manufactured in a way that is necessarily environmentally friendly or American. And so this really gets at that problem as well as the climate issue. So, Mr. Chair, I do appreciate very much your hearing this bill, and thank you, members, for the discussion.
I will renew my motion that House File 3702 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance Division. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Ayes have it. Motion is adopted.
Mr.
Thank
Chair,
you.
Can we go back and do the hearing over? I wanted to hear Hornstein.
Well, it's recorded, okay?
You can watch it on TV.
I will give you a briefing, Representative.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lee, House File 3058. And members, on that last bill, there was in your packet a letter from the Sierra Club. Representative Lee, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair and Committee, I'd like to move House File 3058 to be considered and laid over for possible inclusion.
Representative Lee, I believe you have an author's amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair, and so the author's amendment aims to narrow the scope of the bill for House File 3058, and so it would include an analysis of facility emissions using the PCA's MNRS model to indicate air emissions that facility has that pose a risk of greater than 1 in 1,000 or a non-cancer hazard quotient.
So, Representative Lee, are you moving the A2 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the A2 amendment.
Representative Lee moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Lee to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. House 5 3058 as amended is a bill requiring the Minnesota Pollution Control Agencies before issuing a permit to a facility in the 7-county metro area to analyze and consider the cumulative level of past and current environmental pollution from all sources in the geographic area in which the permitted facility's emissions are likely to be deposited, and the cost of conducting the analysis will be paid through air quality permit fees. Currently, this is only required in South Minneapolis neighborhood and the Phillips neighborhood, and so my bill will expand it to the 7-county metro area. And also, House File 3058 provides for a new position within the MPCA, a community liaison position, to communicate with communities to help facilitate cumulative impact air permits, and as well as to assist in interactions between the MPCA and communities who are experiencing exposure to air pollution.
And you have some testifiers.
I do, Mr. Chair.
So first is Nancy Prismas.
Hello.
Welcome to the committee.
My name is Nancy Prismas. Thank you, Chair. I'm with the city of I live in the city of Minneapolis in District 60A. I'm here to testify on behalf of this bill. I am happy to do so. I haven't seen the Second Amendment, however, and without seeing that, I would like to look at it and come back to this group and then testify.
Prismas, would you want to take a moment and
yes,
read
I would.
Through?
Could I come back because yep. I have to figure out what this means.
We have five testifiers on the list, so.
Thank you.
Yep. Roxanne O'Brien. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for your time. This is, I think, the second time I'm testifying for this bill, but now a new committee. And, well, first of all, I just wanted to say some things about my community. I know I can recognize some of you from the last committee, so it might sound like repeated information, but I just want to make sure that you guys are aware of what's going on in my community, and it also relates to other communities. But I think most people know North Minneapolis as a community that's got a lot of crime. I think some things people don't know is that an estimated 37 deaths can be attributed to particulate matter pollution in zip codes 55411 and 55404 in 2010 compared to 22 area homicides reported by MPD. So I just want to let you guys know that twice as many people die from pollution than from homicides in my neighborhood, unlike what the media portrays us to be. I also want to say that my community has a lot of health issues, probably because we're just overburdened in general by systematic inequities. And so we call our community an overburdened community because we're just faced with so many hardships. And so that takes a toll on people's health as it is. So when we're overburdened by more facilities that emit different toxins. We have no really way to, we have no way to fight it with our bodies, even me. I'm not feeling well today, but I came to testify because it's very important. And I probably will be leaving here and going to the hospital after that. But it's important for me to let you guys know that I love my community, and I love fighting for environmental justice. I'm for these bills because I think that they're going to protect us. I think it's at least moving in the direction towards better protection for our communities. And I would want the same for your communities as well. I want the same for all of our communities. I've fought for many different issues I've fought for people against foreclosures, and I've done numerous work in different areas, but I've never been more passionate about environmental justice because it's something that we all are impacted by. And so I'm really thankful that Fuli has continued to be accountable to our communities. He's listening. He doesn't wait for us to beg him to step up and take leadership on things like this. And I'm going to speak on the other bill, too, so I don't want to take up too much time. But, you know, I really hope that we can come to a common understanding and respect for each other to agree that we will put people over profits. We will move in that direction as a society. Because, I mean, we can't eat money. We can't drink it. And all of our communities we depend on the Mississippi for our drinking water. And so I think what we need to think about today when we pass these bills, or if we do, I'm jumping the gun a little bit, that, you know, we all have a stake in this. And we really need to hold people accountable, especially facilities and agencies that are supposed, that are either stationed in our community making money, or agencies that are in our, are responsible for our community's protection. And so I think that's what these bills do, or that's what this first bill does, is it would require just pretty much transparency around and accountability around what's moving into a neighborhood that's already overburdened, or a neighborhood that maybe not as overburdened as my community, but in general, we're all connected. And I want to just say one last thing. There's no way that we can have a healthy economy without a healthy ecosystem.
Thank you. Mike Bennett. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for everybody's time today. I was informed of the bill's pretty short notice as of recently.
State your name for the record.
Sure. For the record, Mike Bennett. I am a primary resident of Marshall Terrace neighborhood, which is on the east side of the Mississippi River, directly across some of these organizations that are the bill is checking the air for, basically. And really, I can come with testimony of just firsthand experience of the realities of the places, if that's appropriate here. So being across the street, it is, you know, basically a daily occurrence. You can smell it in the air. It's not, you know, you don't need necessarily to have a lot of technological testing or anything like that, although it needs to be done. But on any given day, the smell from the GAF facility and the unknown particles from Northern Metals as well, it's present every day of the week. I would, there's a park across the street from my house. Love to go out there with my kid on any day of the week and spend time out there and not have to wonder what this is doing to our health. Like to just live life like anybody else would be able to and not have these concerns on a regular basis. Beyond just the, you know, sort of environmental pollution, there's also noise pollution that comes out of these places as well, which I know is not necessarily a study. But just for the general knowledge of everyone, it's not just beyond particles in the air. It's also noise. Nothing further.
Sophie Bernovic.
Good
Welcome.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Sophie Bernovic, and I live in Northeast Minneapolis, and I'm here as a very concerned citizen in support of HF 3058. The MPCA monitors 81 chemicals at the Lowry Bridge. All of these chemicals cause cancer. Although the MPCA monitors the 81 air poisons, MPCA staff can't fine or shut down a plant that burns them because there is no law against the chemicals being in the air. The public health study done in 2016 alone should give you cause for great concern. The mortality study showed that people around the Lowry Bridge area died of air pollution related diseases at 330% higher rate than in western Hennepin County. Gaff Shingles Factory, which I can see from my house, has a perpetual permit. This is why Gaff's permit never expires and never goes under review. It was an exception made to the EPA rules for 10 companies in Minnesota. So even with this proposed bill, I'm still scared that places like Gaff will be able to go back to business as usual. Although I believe there should be more policy changes regarding these unregulated plants, I support this step in the right direction. I have lived in Northeast Minneapolis in the Botno neighborhood for 10 years. I have two young children, ages 1 and 3, Eloise and Miles. I will probably already die of cancer because of this unregulated pollution. My focus at this point is on the children and the rest of the people in these affected areas. You have a chance to help. We need your protection. Please help us. Please pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Taza Cleveland. Welcome.
Hi, guys. Hi, everybody. I'm Tasia. I actually just came here from school because this is very important. But I'm from North Minneapolis and Juxtaposition Arts. Thank you for giving me. Well, sorry, I'm like really nervous because this is the second time like that I've done something like this. So I might be like a little jumpy. But
you got it. We love you, Tasia. You got it.
Thanks. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here today. One of the many reasons I love our democratic system. I'm here on behalf of everyone who was once like me, who wasn't aware of their rights or their voice. We deserve clean air, at the very least. Our communities face enough adversity, environmental and systemic racism, and it is not okay. Our health and safety is very important, and these facilities need to be held accountable due to the negative effects it has on our future of our communities. Just because they're grandfathered in doesn't mean that they should be allowed to continue to operate in a manner which is detrimental to the health and safety of the future of our youth and communities. And this is why I support these bills. So thanks, guys, for letting me talk today.
Thank you. Nancy Christmas. Welcome back.
Chair Hansen, committee, thank you for letting me return. I'm here to speak as Nancy Prismas from Northeast Minneapolis. I also represent just an association of people who call themselves the Environmental Quality of Life, who've been working on this since 2014 to address the issues in North and Northeast Minneapolis around the Lowry Bridge. We're the people who put together the public health study with the University of Minnesota that showed those very dire health results as compared to western Hennepin County. Our group, in association with the Botno Neighborhood Association and Marshall Terrace and other Sheridan neighborhood, other organizations of small groups have been working diligently to bring to the forefront what is going on with the non-expiring permits, otherwise known as perpetual permits or grandfathered permits, on the 10 large companies in Minnesota, two of which are located in Northeast Minneapolis and North Minneapolis. One of them you just had happen to blow up in Becker, which is Northern Metals Recycling, and what a cheap way to burn off all the refuse off those metal cars. We should be looking into that closely because they had a fire in North Minneapolis as well under similarly suspicious circumstances. This company and the other company that we are concerned about, GAF Building Materials, happen to be major polluters. They're not like the rest of the non-expiring permits that are in front of you. They are tier five polluters according to EPA, and they were granted exceptions. That's why I'm a little bit concerned about the Second Amendment today. I support everything else in the 3058 House file, but I want to draw to your attention that as of December 31st, 2019, the min risks for formaldehyde from plants like the shingle plants and XL Energy, any coal-fired plant or gas-fired plant, formaldehyde was considered 2.0 per cubic meter of air, and it was raised to 9.0 by the Minnesota Department of Health. And so one day it was 2.0 per cubic meter of air was going to cause you cancer over 3 years exposure or more, and then the next day they said it was 9.0. I don't believe that we should be writing into this bill min risks assessment because it is too lax in many cases, and it doesn't reflect the true cancer rate. It's actually in Canada, it's 1.2 parts per million for formaldehyde. All of you know how bad formaldehyde is. It causes leukemia under exposure. It's not even allowed at that rate of 1.2 parts per million in any manufacturing of foam or anything like that for foam pellets or stuff. So why should we allow it in our air? This is something serious, and I ask you please to consider that this is a very good bill. It's going forward. We really appreciate your work on this, Foo Lee. We really do. But we shouldn't make it so lax as to follow min risks. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? Any questions of members? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is MPCA going to testify on this bill? Have you got them?
I believe they're here. So I think. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Greta Gothier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question, Representative Fabian.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was to you. Is the MPCA going to testify on this bill? I didn't ask an MPCA question, but if you want to make a comment about the bill, I do have a couple of questions for MPCA, so whichever you prefer, Mr. Chair.
Proceed on your opinions on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. We did testify in the Policy Committee, and so the underlying goal of this bill, which involves giving communities a more involvement in our work. We don't disagree with that, and we have done a lot of things in our agency recently to make more of that or allow for more of that to happen and to do more of that. Of course, we are not taking an official position on this bill because it has budget implications, and our position on the supplemental budget will be the governor's position on the supplemental government, which will be announced tomorrow. So in that sense, we're not taking a formal position. We have been working with the author and discussing some of the implications and how perhaps to scope this so that it is more implementable at the agency. And that pretty much concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
And Ms. Gothier, with the amendment, the fiscal note would change?
Mr. Chair and members, yes. but I don't know by how much at this point.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's kind of what I'm wondering about with the path of the bill. This is just going to go to
laid over.
Okay, so we can further look at that at another time. So, Ms. Gauthier, how many permits are there in the seven county metro area that would be impacted by this bill as amended?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Fabian, I believe the previous amendment to the bill in the last committee stop narrowed it dramatically, and I believe this one narrows it to about 50 permits, we think.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if it limits it to 50 permits, how many of those permits are renewed every 2 years? Or how many of those 50 permits would be renewed in a single year, in a single fiscal year?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Fabian. I don't have a list of the 50 with me. I'm assuming that some of them are, so they're all air permits. We have both federal air permits that we implement in Minnesota and state air permits. So I'm not sure what the mix is federal to state. The federal permits are under Part 70 of the Clean Air Act. And the state permits are called state individual permits. So the state individual permits are the ones that are currently non-expiring. The federal permits, those I believe do expire. I'm not sure if they're 5 or 10 year permits, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Fabian.
Excuse me, I'm being told they're 5 year permits, pardon me.
Okay, so, well, members, if it's a 5 year permit and there's 50, that means we have to go through the cycle five a year. Anyway, my point is that this is going to be incredibly expensive if the permit applicants are going to be the ones who foot the cost for this program. How many of those permits are then public? They belong to the city of Minneapolis or St. Paul?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fabian, I'm sorry I don't have that list with me, so I'm not able to tell you how many are public and how many are private organizations.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd appreciate if we could get that information.
Sure.
And then if I can, Mr.
Yep.
Chair, thank you.
Fabian.
So what are you going to do for rulemaking through this process? Anything?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Fabian, I'm told that we would probably have to do some rulemaking around this, although I'd have to bring someone else up to speak to the specifics of that, if that's what you would like.
Representative Fabian.
Well, I'd just like to know what the scope of the rulemaking would need to be, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Gauthier.
Just a moment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm told that the fiscal note does delineate that and says that it would be to recover direct costs. Rulemaking would have to come about for that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason I ask about rulemaking is I don't know that there's anything that you have currently that measures cumulative effects or defines cumulative effect anywhere. How are we going to come up with what we're actually measuring there?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Fabian. Yes, we do have something about, we do have a protocol, if you will, or a process to measure or to look at the cumulative impact and to analyze the cumulative impacts of air permits. As you may recall, there was a bill passed, I believe it was Representative Karen Clark's bill in 2007 that is in the language of the bill before you, I believe right now, if you look on lines, it starts on line 1.18 through 2.13 for sure. And this directed the agency to do cumulative impact analysis on air permits in a certain area of the city of Minneapolis that's called the Phillips neighborhood. And so we have gone ahead and done that for two major permits so far. One was a Met Council bus barn, so to speak, and the other one was a permit at Abbott Northwestern Hospital. So we have set that protocol. We also wrote a paper about what our protocol was, and it was published internationally in scientific journals. And I do know that the state of California uses our protocol, and I understand there is a bill similar to this that's been introduced in New Jersey this year, although I have not read it. So we do have some experience doing this for air permits.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be quick. So how many they couldn't answer the question about municipal permits in this thing. Is it safe to assume that, say, for example, the city of Minneapolis has air permits?
Ms. Gothier.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure how many permits we have with the city of Minneapolis, because I'm not sure of the ownership structure of some of the facilities in Minneapolis. I know we probably have some permits with the HERC, the garbage incinerator, but I'm not sure if that is city-owned or apparently it's county-owned, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Fabian, that would be a county-owned facility, and I'm not sure how many permits we have with the city of Minneapolis, but we can get that for you.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
And last one. Because of the nature of the municipal permits for either a county or a city, I'm looking around the room. I don't see anybody from Minneapolis or Hennepin County here that wants to testify. There's obviously going to be a significant increase cost to reissuing a permit. I'm curious to know what the local governments have to say about this bill.
The bill was posted. We have five. We were able to get five testifiers. If they want to testify, they should be here. Representative Guineas.
Yes. For Ms. Gauthier, mm-hmm. I think I understand you saying that you agree with the underlying premise of this bill. Is that correct?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Guineas, thanks for the question. In 2013, our agency adopted an environmental justice framework and began implementing that through our agency. We're still working on it. In 2016, we did form an environmental justice advisory committee that advises the commissioner, meets regularly with her on a number of matters before the commissioner and also on the agency. So, and we have, since the Walz administration began, we have created a new unit of staff that are working on this issue, specifically on environmental injustice issues with both tribes and other communities in Minnesota that have been overburdened by environmental contamination in the past. So we do share the general idea that there is environmental injustice and that we need to do something. We need to take account of that more in what we do. Because when the laws that we implement were written back in the 60s and 70s, that was not something that was written into those laws.
Representative Guineas.
Well, thank you. The reason I asked that is if you all share the same, wanting the same outcome, I can't understand why there's so many roadblocks in protecting people's health. I mean, it's not computing to me. Forming task forces and stakeholder groups has never been productive in Minnesota. So what is it that you can do absent a bill? I totally support the bill, but what would you be doing absent the bill to remedy this situation of cumulative pollutants hurting people's health?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Guineas. Thank you for the question. I am not certain of all of the every single requirement that is statutorily laid on the agency, although I do know we are subject to 290 some different sites in statute. we have been working at reaching out more to those communities, at engaging all communities in our work, being more transparent about our information, trying to take the decision makers of our agency out into communities around the state. For example, our commissioner has been out and around talking about a variety of issues that are before the agency. So beyond that, I would probably need to pull together some information from our staff, Mr. Chairman, and get back to you on specific projects that we have been working on.
Representative McGinnis.
I actually don't want you to get back. I mean, what I hear is reaching out. I hear education, but I don't hear protection, protecting the communities that Representative Lee is trying to protect. It is not enough to discuss and educate. It is enough when folks are actually protected.
Ms. Gothier.
Mr. Chairman, we are very concerned about the public health in Minnesota. That is part of our mission. And I would say that there are many issues out there that remain to be addressed by either this legislature or this administration or by Congress and other administrations.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm trying to kind of play catch up with this fiscal note, my understanding, with the amendment that this five-page fiscal note is somewhat outdated. But in here on page two, looked like we narrowed the scope of emission permits that would be impacted, but there were 862 of them in the geographical area. Mm-hmm. But did I understand your testimony correct now that would go from 862 permits to 50?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lewick, that is my understanding of the impact of the A2 amendment today.
Okay. And then on the next page on thank you, Mr. Chair, I guess it's item 8 up here, it lays out the process to fund this, and it makes the assumption that this would become effective a day upon signing, I guess, and that you would have to commence rulemaking by 1 July of this year and have to complete it by 31 December of 2021. Is that realistic to complete it on time?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lewick, as you know, the MPCA has a number of rules that we are constantly reviewing and bringing forward as there's new scientific information available or new circumstances. In general, it takes us about 18 months, if everything lines up, to do rulemaking. However, in recent times, we have had to go longer than that because we have either gotten many, many, many comments from the public to whom we respond to every single one, or we have had numerous hearings. In some cases, we've decided to have those hearings around the state to gather more information before an ALJ. So without knowing for sure what would happen, if every piece of the process lines up exactly, it should take us about 18 months. But it seems like it's been hard to hit that in recent years due to increased public interest in what we're doing.
One more quick question for follow-up. Do you anticipate in that rulemaking process that we would just go across the entire inventory of permits and spread that cost, or would this cost be very specific to those 50 permits that we're dealing with? Because I can see that might cause all kinds of folks to want special hearings and extensions if there becomes a big argument over whether permittees out beyond the 50 that appear to be identified would be subject to a significant increase in permit cost. as opposed to everybody in that class across the state of Minnesota.
Ms. Gothier.
So, Mr. Chairman, I am not sure at this point in time what we would actually propose as a rule to implement this, because I'm not sure exactly what language we would use to put it forward. So I'm not sure that I can answer that question without knowing that. It seems like these are individual permits. These are state individual permits. The ones that are state individual permits, that's an individual permit specifically to that site, that place on the ground. So that seems to me like that would be an instance where that cost of the proposed hearing in the bill would be borne. And as for the federal permits, I'm assuming that the cost would be borne by those permittees, actually either state or federal, that fall within the definition that has been adopted in the A2 amendment today. So I do not believe it would go to the entire class of air permits across the state, but rather to those specifically identified in the legislation were it to become law.
Representative Claflin.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Lee and Ms. Gothier, could you briefly describe the difference between the work that would be done under these cumulative air permits versus the current process in the current air permits?
Mr. Chair, I don't have expertise in that, so I'll have to give it to MPCA.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Claflin.
Ms. Gothier.
So the cumulative impact analysis has a number of elements to it, and they include looking at the sensitivity of those who live in the cumulative impacted area in terms of the magnitude of their response to a specific stimuli or exposure. It also includes looking across many chemicals and determining if there's an additive impact. It also tries to take into account that people are exposed to environmental chemicals in many ways, sometimes breathing, sometimes eating, sometimes touching, etc. So it tries to address that as well. It looks at the inclusion of more than one source of pollution within a specific area of where the permittee would be. It also looks at non-chemical stressors such as physical or biological agents, and also looks at community vulnerability, which is a community's availability to recover or repair. And health disparities are an outcome of that, but also are a vulnerability of the community at the same time. And so those are some of the impacts. Those are the main pieces of cumulative impact analysis as we have done on air permits in the Phillips neighborhood in Minneapolis, and that is what we would do on these additional permits. Whereas a permit without that is not subject to this bill, for example, were this to pass in the law, we have a regular permitting process that would happen depending on the type of air permit that they have. So there are registrations, there are state individual permits, and there are federal permits, and I'm probably missing a couple of others, each of which has its own process as set forth by either state or federal and state law or rule.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Lee, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And, you know, as the testifiers have said from the public, too, this is about protecting human health. And so I urge the committee to help consider this bill as it's being laid over.
Representative Lee renews his motion that House File 3058, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Bill is laid over. Representative Lee, any opening comments on House File 3057?
Mr. Chair and committee members, House File 3057 is a bill to allow the public to comment and inquire about large emitter air pollutants that have non-expiring state individual air quality permits issued by the PCA. And this will require separate public informational meetings every 5 years on facilities with these permits. And I'll just keep it at that and allow for public testimony. I understand that we have quite a few sign up.
We need to move the bill.
And I would like to move House File 3057 in front of the committee to be considered to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Testifier is Nancy Prismas. Welcome back.
Chairman Hansen, committee, thank you very much for hearing us on House File 3057, and thank you, Fuli, for bringing it forward on our behalf. Representative, we appreciate you. This is a very much improved from the previous bill that we saw with the one amendment or the change. I support this very much. I would bring your attention to the second page, 211. It is very important that we have public information in a timely way. And if we get the determination from the commissioner for the MPCA, 15 days after the determination, there's no chance for an injunction or anything else to happen. So therefore, I would ask that one word be added before this is finally decided in the long legislative process, and the word is implementation. And it would read, the commissioner must state the reasons for the determination in writing within 15 days of determination implementation, so that we would have a fair chance to look at why it is being denied, why our request for an existing non-expiring permit, 10 of which are really important in this state. The other ones are controlled by the county or the city, and dry cleaners are controlled with non-expiring permits, little hospitals with a few microbes or microns of radiation have non-expiring permits. All of those are just mandatory turnovers. They happen like this. It's not expensive. And all the other ones pay for their own. We're already paying for their own, but they don't expire. So there's really not a fiscal change here. And you can go look up on this MPCA website and figure out which ones are the big ones and which ones are the little ones that are non-expiring. And you can figure out all the ones that are city or county by calling the city or county, and they send you a list. It's really not hard to find, and the information is readily available without a FOIA. So this information should be coming forth from the MPCA without any problem at all. If I can find it, any dumb bunny can find it, okay, because I'm not a good bunny. I'm just a dumb bunny, but I don't give up. And I ask you folks to please pass this, and as it goes forward, to add one word at the end, implementation. Thank you, Fuli. Thank you all. Thank you, Chairman.
Roxanne O'Brien. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I honestly didn't prepare for either one of these speeches. Sometimes I'm just probably better when I just speak from the heart. So I was thinking, as I've been to both of these hearings, how I keep hearing about this process from the MPCA's side. And I want to tell you my experiences. I've been working, I've been organizing and kind of getting my community aware of what's happening around Northern Metals for about 8 years, since 2011. So that's how long I've been a super volunteer on this work. And I still sit on the Northern Metals Consent Decree. I also sit on the Green Zones Committee. I also served 4 years for the Community Environmental Advisory Committee for the city. And I'm sure I'm on a couple more boards. I think I got the police park police advisory tonight and Green Zones. I don't know how I'm gonna make them both. But I feel like I've just spent so much of my time and energy on this that I should probably be getting a check from the MPCA, because I feel like, after I thought we were going to be done with Northern Metals, but if you've been paying attention to the news, that's just like a never-ending story. And I don't know if you guys know, but there was a fire. The same day that there was a fire in Becker, there was a fire in Camden, New Jersey, from the same parent company, EMR, that owns Northern Metals, which is interesting. And exactly 7 years to the date of the fire in Becker, and in and in New Jersey, there was a fire on the north side from Northern Metals. I don't know if it's coincidence. I don't know what's going on. But I said that when we were done with Northern Metals, I would support Northeast residents who have been taking leadership on GAF, which is a whole nother story, a corporation that makes 25% of their nationwide profits off of our location alone, which is why they really love our neighborhood. But it's exploitation, and it's grandfathered in, which I don't understand that either. To me, that seems like a classist, racist policy that's been around and continuing to be there, because nobody will look at that and say, look, maybe this is outdated here, this grandfathering thing. But every time I call the MPCA, multiple emails, I've noticed that it's like a lot of hush-hush information. Like, they keep information from us purposely, and they also feel like we're, as community members, that we're exaggerating. So I hear a lot, I get a lot of word, you know, about how they feel about me and other people that were exaggerating about this. But, you know, they said the same things, or at least treated us the same way about Northern Metals. And so nothing really happened with that until a whistleblower came out from the job and told that they were actually lying and committing felonies on their records, which is a whole nother issue, that these places are allowed to test themselves. And I was hearing that the person who had, person who was in charge of whether or not we had a permit review, said that they didn't want to do a permit review because they felt like then we would think that we could get rid of GAF automatically. And I just don't understand how one person can make that decision outside of my community for us. We deserve transparency. We deserve to know what's going on in our communities. We've already got numerous facilities that are exploiting our natural resources, and we don't even know what our communities are, how we are totally impacted by these things, by the lead, by the mercury. We have the highest lead in our communities. You know, some areas are higher than Flint, and it just doesn't make any sense. You know, when we're asking for information from MPCA, it should not be a secret. We keep asking, how do we get these permit reviews? And it's like pulling teeth. Like, I don't even really, I've never been given an explanation. So it's good that this bill is asking for a written explanation of why, you know, a permit review would even be denied, because I'm not getting any information. And I know, like, all the politicians in my neighborhood, like, I'm on all these committees. I'm a Bush fellow. Like, you would think that I could get this information. If I can't get this information, how is anybody else in my community getting this information? And so, I don't know, y'all. I'm tired. I don't want to drag it on. But I have faith that you guys will make the right decision. And I feel like I truly feel your concern for our community. So I just want to say how grateful I am. It's really hard to come up here all the way from North Minneapolis and continue to ask for these things that I think are really bare minimum to what communities deserve. So thank you again for your time, and I hope you guys have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Bennett.
So again,
welcome.
Thank you, Mike Bennett again. And just to reiterate, I don't really have anything else to say besides what I commented on previously. This is all very real that we're talking about with these organizations. Understand their place in the community, and that they have they're historical organizations. They've been here for many, many years. But at that time, Minneapolis was a very different place. They are surrounded by homes and families and everything else. So anything that we can do that helps move forward any oversight, transparency, and betterment of the community as a whole is greatly appreciated by the citizens. Thank you.
Thank you. Sophie Bernvik.
Hi again, Mr. Chair and members. So again, my name is Sophie Bernovic, and I live in Northeast Minneapolis, and I'm here as a very concerned citizen in support of HF 3057. Again, Gaff Shingles Factory at the Lowry Bridge, Gaff Shingles Factory at the Lowry Avenue Bridge in North Minneapolis, where I live with my family, including two small children, ages 1 and 3, is a multi-billion dollar corporation making almost 25% of their nationwide profits off North and Northeast Minneapolis air, water, and people. Again, Gaff has a perpetual permit. This is why Gaff's permit never expires and never goes under review. It was an exception made to the EPA rules for 10 companies in Minnesota. Northern Metals and Gaff are two of the 10 plants that don't have to follow regulations that other companies of level 5 emissions must follow. And as you may or may not know, level 5 is the most dangerous to human health. These companies are not regulated by the EPA. MPCA is the only agency that regulates them, even though the EPA regulates all of the other level 5 emitters. If and when Gaff puts in the RTO, a regenerative thermal oxidizer, it will be considered an emissions equipment change, and therefore the MPCA may, and the key word is may, require Gaff to undergo a full permit review. Unfortunately, I read that the city and MPCA have cut a deal to forgo this permit review because Gaff is voluntarily putting in the RTO. Gaff negotiated this voluntary RTO if the MPCA forgets about the permit review. The MPCA can waive permit reviews on Gaff as it doesn't follow the EPA rules. The ability for a plant, especially a level 5 plant, to have lax permits and cut deals to forgo permit reviews is not right. These places are killing us. They are killing us. Again, I believe there should be more policy changes regarding these unregulated polluters, but a public hearing requirement is a great opportunity to voice our concerns, and hopefully some actual protection from the state will happen. Again, this bill is a step in the right direction. Please pass it. Thank you. Thank you, Fu.
Thank you. Beth Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Elizabeth Lee, and I am a resident of Becker Township. I know some other citizens spoke about the fire that was recently there. And I've very recently joined this ever-growing group of community activists that are fighting to get acknowledgement for and safeguards against the pollution that has occurred in our cities. And one thing I've learned after joining this community is that there are environmental justice groups across the state that are popping up as a reaction and a response to a process that isn't working for the communities that these places are in. My community in Becker, I guess, is the beneficiary of sorts of Northern Metals, as it was agreed to be removed from North Minneapolis. And in 2018, I was involved with when the initial meetings were occurring and the permitting process was being undergone. The public commenting period at that time was really an exercise in predicting the future. There was no way to know how that facility was going to actually look in our community. We still don't know that, as it's still not opened. Northern Metals and the MPCA came to our community, and they were touting a brand new, a state-of-the-art facility that supposedly addressed all of the issues that they had in North Minneapolis. What I don't believe it addressed, adequately at least, was the risk of fire. And on February 18th, the Northern Metals facility, the scrap pile that they had amassed there, caught fire. They had accumulated a large pile in anticipation of opening, and when it caught fire, it burned for 5 days. This fire affected me, it affected my community, and it affected my family. The air was thick like soup. It caught in the back of your throat. My 5-year-old son has asthma and began coughing uncontrollably when we would go into the smoke plume. it was really surreal, the feeling that this company came into our community, hadn't even opened yet, and we had this issue. What I've learned since this fire is that not only are fires in metal recycling common, but that Northern Metals alone has had 4 in the last 5 years, 5 including Becker. And knowing what I know now, I have so many more questions for not only the MPCA, but Northern Metals and my community leaders. And hindsight is 2020, and I get that, but it shouldn't be hindsight. Community concerns for a facility and whether it's working or not shouldn't collect in a pit of regret. It should be an ever-changing evaluation of that business and its practices. And we really need strong leadership now more than ever so that the communities are protected who are victimized by this pollution, who are held hostage by a process that doesn't protect citizens. And this bill would be a protective measure that would give communities back their voice, which I believe is what is lacking. Thank you.
Thank you. Deja Cleveland. Welcome back.
I didn't know I was going to get called up again. So we're speaking on behalf of the second bill then?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know that I was going to get called up here again, so I'm just going to be speaking from my heart, I guess. Where should I start? So, like, I agree, like, a lot with most of what everybody's been saying in here. So I'm not going to, like, repeat too much because I feel like everybody, like, spoke for me already. But I just know that, like, no offense, but if these bills don't get passed, like, I've learned so much in this last month that, like, these corporations and facilities just don't have, like, permits or, like, they're just getting away with things that, like, they shouldn't be, and it's not, I feel like they should be held accountable for that. And, like, sorry I'm saying like so much because I'm nervous, but, these corporations and these facilities should, like, be held accountable for the negative impacts that they're making on our communities, especially the north side, and I feel like it's, I'm not going to say fair because, you know, life isn't fair. So it's not, let's say the word equal, it's not just, like, that they're choosing our community, like, for these, like, to place their corporations or their businesses in these communities, because a lot of people, like, just like how I used to be, like, a lot of people aren't informed or are aware of their rights and that they have a voice and that we have we have the right to be here and let you guys know, like, what's really going on. If these bills just don't get passed, I know, like, things, like, nothing's going to change, and, like, things should be changing because I'm, like, okay, so I just turned 18, but I know that people who are younger than me, like, they're going to still be going through this stuff, like, even when I pass away, like, even though that's in a long time, they're still going to be experiencing, like, these negative impacts that these businesses have on our communities. And it's just not the word fair, but it's just unjust, and it should be, and you guys, like, have the power to change that. So yeah, thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wants to testify for or against the bill? Yes. Welcome. State your name.
My name is Nancy Peterson. I live in Falcon Heights, and I have absolutely no fear that anyone will drop a metal shredder or shingles factory into my neighborhood in Falcon Heights, but I do know that everything that gets put into the water and the air comes back to haunt all of us. And I don't want to see friends and family and communities used as a dumping place or allowed to just continue with business as usual that is making them ill and ruining their health and their lives. I want to see justice done in environmentalism, and I think these two bills are good first steps to make that happen. And I will add one thought, and that is, as I say, people who live in Falcon Heights rarely think about environmental dangers and threats to our health. The week that the trash pile caught fire in Becker, that horrible black oily smoke traveled down I-94 and spread itself in the suburban communities across the northern edges of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And the people in those communities went crazy. And if you can't prevent that kind of thing, if you don't hold people accountable, and that kind of thing happens on any regular basis, you won't believe the whining and the anger that you will get from the residents of those communities. So I beg you to please take care of the communities that are most impacted right now. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Anyone else? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to encourage the members of the committee to consider the public testimony that we have heard today and urge your support as we lay the bill over for possible inclusion.
Representative Lee renews his motion that House File 3057 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Representative Waslawick. House File 3378. I will move that House File 3378 be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary and Civil Law Division. Representative Waslawick, I believe you have an author's amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair.
If you could describe that.
Yep. So the author's amendment adds a few things in. It adds some guidelines for what should happen at the public meeting that we're proposing happen. It also puts a kind of a floor on when we have a public meeting. So if the penalty is, if the settlement is greater than $25,000, we're trying to limit the scope, knowing what we know about how penalties are given out. And then also trying to figure out how to make this happen given what already exists in state law.
I will move the DE3 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Is there any discussion? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Ayes have it. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Waslawick, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. So I want to first thank all of the testifiers who came out today to support Representative Lee's bills. I'm a co-author, I think, on both of those and share a lot of those concerns. Learned a lot about the MPCA process, how it works and doesn't work, and think that there's a lot of work to be done. A concern that bubbled up in discussions in my community around the issue of water gremlin was a lack of public engagement. We've clearly heard testimony about the lack of public engagement in a lot of different ways. But one of the ways that we saw a hole was specifically regarding community input into agreements that MPCA signs with companies that violate permits. Community members in my community affected by water gremlin have been very clear that they would have liked to have had some sort of input into how the penalty money that was paid by water gremlin would be used. And they are folks speaking directly from the community who are impacted by what the company was doing, and they felt like they should have had a voice as a community who's impacted in what happened with that money. Planting trees was one of those things that really directly impacted the community, and it wasn't really what the community was looking for in terms of having an actual impact based on the health impacts that folks were seeing in the community. So the bill would require MPCA to hold a public meeting to let community members know what happened and to seek their input into the process in terms of what's happening with stipulation agreements.
Any questions? Is there anyone in the audience to testify for or against the bill? Ms. Gauthier. Quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We did testify in the policy committee on this bill that requires us to hold a hearing, and our main concern in the policy committee was the conflict with the data practices statutes, because right now those statutes protect information when we are in an open enforcement process with the permittee. So it looks like the amendment creates an exception to the Data Practices Act at line 1.9 and would allow us to make certain civil investigative data available to the public at the required public meetings, including the amount, frequency, duration, chemical nature of the pollution, et cetera, risk to public health and the environment. And so that does relieve one of our concerns about this legislation. So we still, the amendment requires us to specifically determine the risk to public health and the environment from the exposure at line 1.11. So that is not really within our wheelhouse. That's more the Department of Health. So assuming that we would be working with them, but it's not something we normally do. Other than that, Mr. Chair, I would say that our other testimony on this bill is unchanged, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Any questions, members? Questions. Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, you're laying this bill over.
This one's going to judiciary.
Okay. So,
and then it probably will have to come back.
Because of the data practices, is that the judiciary?
Correct.
Yeah. Just making sure.
Any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, again, I don't think I need to say why this is important. I think we heard all of that testimony about why it's important to have public engagement in the process. Just want to see this move forward. I think it's really important that we, communities know what's going on in the community. They know what sorts of pollutants are in the environment, what they're being impacted by. In the case of Water Gremlin, this went on for 17 years. And we have folks who live right by the property line of the company. So I think it's really important that communities know what's going on and they have information that they can use to make decisions about their health.
I will renew my motion that House File 3378 as amended be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
No.
Ayes have it. Representative Fabian, we have one more bill on the schedule. I'd like to try to get it done if we could.
What's your motion going to be?
This one is going to Health and Human Services Finance.
Let it rip. Hurry up.
Representative Claflin.
Aye.
Representative Claflin, would you like to move that House File 3180 be recommended to be referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Division?
So moved.
To your bill.
Thank you, Chair. I am bringing this bill because per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, PFAS, are a class of chemicals that are used in a variety of consumer products. And they're known to be contaminants of our water. We're fighting with the contamination of water in the East Metro from 3M production of these chemicals. We're finding contamination of our groundwater throughout the state because of the use of these chemicals and firefighting foams. And we know that they cause human health risks. We know they cause and are linked to increased cancer risk. They affect reproduction, they affect kidney function, liver function, immune response. And this particular bill would ban these chemicals from food and beverage packaging. It can migrate into our food, and banning it from food packaging reduces one of the exposure risks, just eliminating it from our diet, where it would be accumulating in our bodies. It is used to grease-proof takeout containers and fast food wrappers, and it's used in microwave popcorn bags. A few examples of the type of containers that use these products are the brown paperboard boxes that you might get your takeout in. They have the flaps that fold over instead of having a styrofoam container with a paper package. Or some of the molded fiber clamshell packages have a PFAS-containing coating on them. And they're used in some bakery bags and even on some of those gold foil plates underneath cakes. There is a study from the Toxic Free Future and Safer Chemicals Healthy Families group that tested a number of these products and found that out of 78 tested products, 10 of them contained these PFAS chemicals. It was not found in cook-at-home trays like a lasagna tray or in baking and cooking supplies like a cupcake wrapper, but it was found in those takeout containers, the bakery bags, deli papers, and in one single-use plate. So something that you might use at a salad bar or a hot food bar in a grocery store. So we need to address this method of exposure to these chemicals in order to protect our health. Removing PFAS from these products also reduces the accumulation of these chemicals in our environment. They're contaminating our landfills. It's also causing problems for composting. We're trying to do the right thing when we have that paper takeout container by composting it. These chemicals then end up in the compost leachate that's being recirculated, and the compost turns into a toxic waste site. It's turning up in our wastewater. It's in our bodies, it's in our food, and it's showing up in our wastewater. And there are also some other bills that are working to identify other sources of these chemicals. We know it's used to stain-proof carpeting, waterproof jackets, but this is a known exposure, and we know that there is risk to eating these chemicals. There are some other states who are pursuing similar legislation, and we can't leave this up to the FDA to regulate. We need to take action now, which is why I brought the bill to you today.
Is there anyone in the audience who wants to testify for or against the bill? Anyone in the audience who wants to testify? See Ms. Gothier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gothier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chairman, we appreciate that this bill is moving forward, House File 3180, as it addresses important waste issues and public health issues. When the human consumption part is done with these materials, that's where it goes into the waste stream. And even if it is recycled, it can persist. If composted, these products can contaminate or can impact a composting facility and get in the compost or in the contact water of the compost. And the contact water then becomes problematic in terms of how we handle it. So it also is an issue if containers like this are landfilled, because then the PFAS can get into the leachate, and then that becomes another issue as well. So we are supportive that this bill is addressing a real problem out there regarding PFAS. And thank you. That concludes my testimony.
Anyone else in the audience want to testify for or against the bill?
Nancy Prismas. Thank you, Chair Hansen and committee. I just want to point out, if you use any of these products and you reheat them in the microwave, they become an air pollution problem, and they permeate the food that you eat. So these are a real danger, and just because I took chemistry in high school, you can figure it out. Thank you. Thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you. Any closing comments? Oh, Representative Fabian.
Just real quickly, Representative Claflin, there are a number of concerns raised in the Environment Policy Committee. I notice you don't have an amendment to this bill. Is there some reason why you haven't addressed some of those concerns that were brought forward?
Representative Claflin.
Chair and Representative Fabian. Yes, the discussion was around the definition of food package. And from further discussion with research staff, it was clarified to me that this is a straightforward definition of what a food package means, and that the further definitions of what packaging components are, that's to illustrate what these materials can be, but that the PFAS ban is related to the food package.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Claflin, you said something to the effect in your testimony that we know that the PFAS moves from food packaging to the food. Can you show me any scientific evidence that tells us that we know that, for example, in paragraph D, that those PFAS that are in exterior blocking or bracing or exterior strapping or the closures on shipping containers, that the PFAS migrate from there into the food?
Representative
Clapp. Chair and Representative Fabian, it would be any of those components that are part of the food package intended to market, protect, or handle the product intended for food or beverage contact. So something that is not in contact with the food or used to store the food or beverage for sale would not migrate into the food.
Representative Fabian.
So Mr. Chair, Representative Claflin, then why didn't you take out like part of paragraph D, because those are not in contact, direct contact with the food?
Representative Claflin.
Chair and Representative Fabian, they could be in contact with the food. Any labels could be in contact with the food. There's a label on the inside of the shrink wrap that's covering my meat from the butcher shop. But it is referring back up to subpart B, beginning line 1.8, that it's in contact with the food or beverage.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, Mr. Chair, I had serious issues with this bill earlier, and I continue to have them. This is not a well-thought-out bill. Thank you.
Just we're discussing that this would probably come back here after Human Services. So, I renew my motion that House File 3057, oh, wrong one, 3180 be sent to Human Services, recommended to be referred to Human Services. Finance.
Are you sure?
I said finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Ayes have it. Motion is approved, and we are adjourned.